Don't forget to visit marketingcasts.com to find even more custom curated marketing podcasts just like this one. That's marketingcasts.com.
Hi, this is Sean Halter, host of the CMO Suite podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and catch up on all the previous episodes at www.thecmosuite.com.
This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Uconex. Uconex provides digital solutions and teams to brand CMOs, VPs, and marketers looking for true transparency in the biddable media space. From paid social and PPC to complex platforms like the Trade Desk, brands from across the world have connected to Uconex. Visit them today at uconex.com and No Kid Hungry. We're proud to promote No Kid Hungry and their many initiatives to help kids in need of meals. Visit them at nokidhungry.org.
This episode of the CMO Suite is also brought to you by Winmo. Winmo is the most comprehensive and widely used advertising database, providing an unfair advantage to media and marketing professionals nationwide. Winmo tracks every national advertiser, their agency relationships, and key executives within each organization. Get instant media spend, competitor tracking, and industry trend analysis in one easy-to-use application that integrates with all major CRM platforms. CMO Suite listeners receive complimentary trials of Winmo just by visiting winmo.com/CMO Suite.
Finally, the CMO Suite is presented by thecmocouncil.org as their official marketers podcast. The Chief Marketing Officer Council is the only global network of executives specifically dedicated to high-level knowledge exchange, thought leadership, and personal relationship building among senior corporate marketing leaders and brand decision makers. The CMO Council's 15,000-plus members control more than $550 billion in aggregated annual marketing expenditures and run complex distributed marketing and sales operations worldwide. For more information on membership, visit thecmocouncil.org. Let's start the show.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You are listening to the CMO Suite. This is your host, Sean Halter. As a reminder, the CMO Suite is brought to you in part by Uconex. Uconex provides biddable media solutions to brands and agencies across the U.S., Canada, and internationally. I'm excited as we begin to wrap up Season 5. We're bringing on a guest, Julie Podolek. Julie is the co-founder and chief marketing officer for The Modern Pop. I have been following Julie on LinkedIn. I feel like for maybe like the last 2 or 3 years, you like really amped up your LinkedIn game a couple of years ago. And so I was excited to catch up with you on the show. Not only are you this chief marketing officer, but you're the co-founder of The Modern Pop. So first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sean. No, I'm so excited to be on and just to share more about the brand. And I appreciate you following me.
When you follow anybody on social media, especially if it's a platform kind of like LinkedIn, you know, not necessarily TikTok where there's a lot of videos involved, you feel like you kind of get to know somebody sometimes through that platform. And then when you get a chance to either kind of meet them in person or via Zoom, it's kind of funny. It's a different or unique experience in some ways, but maybe that's a little bit of some of the beauty coming out of the pandemic is, again, being on a call with somebody via Zoom or remotely like that, it's kind of just a given now. Does that make any sense to you at all, Julie?
Makes a ton of sense. I mean, I personally miss the face-to-face, but I think it's definitely coming back. But Zoom has, I mean, it's just the new way of living. You have to figure it out. And it does feel close. It feels a lot closer than I think it would have if we never kind of got used to the situation. So for sure.
Used to be that, again, if you weren't going to meet with somebody in person, you would just do a quick phone call with them. So you'd literally kind of dial the phone, you'd put it on speakerphone or whatever. I feel like I haven't done a speakerphone call probably since pre-pandemic. Now it's almost always like, well, let's jump on a Zoom or a Microsoft meeting or whatever it is. Now, certainly there's going to be some times where maybe somebody doesn't have their video on or whatever that is. But a lot of times, again, I guess I feel like maybe kind of 9 out of 10 times they're there, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You're out in California. And is that where you grew up or where did you grow up?
So I'm actually a Jersey girl. I'm very tenacious. And, you know, I'm from New Jersey originally. I met my husband in New York City probably 13, 14 years ago after college. I was in New York for a little while, have always been in kind of the sales and marketing background. We moved out to California for his job originally. And moving from New Jersey, went to school in Ohio, coming back to New York, and then went from New York out to California. I feel really fortunate because it gave me a lot of perspective kind of on the US in general, but moved out there back in 2009 or 2010, and recently actually moved back to get closer to family. So started the company soon after our son was going through teething, our first son. I was a first-time mom, and I was truly looking for a simple ingredient frozen fruit bar that I could give him to kind of help relieve his teething pain. And at the time, you know, this was back in 2013, say, there was absolutely nothing on the market. And so truly just kind of went home and started making them myself out of, you know, a Minute Maid, like, retro blender, and the whole kind of process started from there, just simplifying what I found and what was.
Not to stay on COVID too much, but I feel like you also see a lot of new entrepreneurs that are kind of coming out of this, people who are, you know, who've taken a moment out of their life, whether it's because they lost their job or they changed their job or they had something happen in their life, or in your case, you know, because you had kids and you were looking for something and you just couldn't find it. There is a tenacity that sometimes comes out of that. You said you grew up in Jersey. So talk to me about that. Do you have any brothers and sisters? Does your family still live there, or do you go back often?
I love this. I love talking about my life. And I think it's really important too, because I think it kind of makes up why you're here now and what you're doing. So in New Jersey, I have my dad out there. My mom unfortunately recently passed, and she was out in California, kind of near us. I have an older sister. She's 3 years older. She's amazing. And she is in Colorado now. So we used to visit her a lot. We'll still make the trip out there. And then my husband's family is up in New Hampshire. So it's nice to have the support, to have family somewhat a lot closer, drivable distance to see the kids. So it definitely feels good to be back. I went to Ohio Wesleyan University, so a little town called Delaware, liberal arts school. My sister actually went to Denison, another Ohio school. And I used to tailgate at the OHIO, all of those games. So that was a lot of fun, the Ohio State. I actually majored in art. I was a BFA major. So my dad is actually an artist as well. So kind of have that creative background. I had a minor in marketing. And I mean, my passion is truly sales. And I think kind of the marketing and the sales go hand in hand.
You had a little bit of
a background in art. And obviously you just talked about the fact that you had either a minor in marketing, or marketing kind of flowed through that. And from there, I think it often allows you to be able to utilize both pieces. If you're great at sales and you understand how marketing works, again, obviously it gives you an opportunity to really think about the process itself. You can make an amazing product, but if nobody knows what it is, or you don't understand how to market it, how many times does something not make it, even though it's a great product, because they just don't understand how to market itself, or how to market to it. So after school, I think that's when you said you moved to New York. And did you work while you were there prior to moving out to California?
I worked at a really high-end home furnishing store. It's called Scully & Scully. It's on Park Avenue, right in 60th Street. I was really close with Michael Scully, who's the owner there, and the company is still there. And I actually traveled. I was a part of the sales floor as well as traveling. So I traveled abroad with him. I really got to see, I mean, we went to Paris, we went to Ireland, really got to see a lot of the world, work directly with different vendors, just, you know, obviously sales and relationships building. Got my feet wet there. I absolutely loved that job. I mean, I think that it really showed me, you know, not only was I strong at sales, but, you know, it wasn't even my product. So I think I saw a lot of that just stemmed from relationships, not even that the person necessarily needed the piece that they were buying, but more so that they trusted me and I guided them. And people like to be led. And I really learned a lot at that position.
I do think it still holds very true today, no matter what it is that you're selling, or whether, you know, whether again, you're a CMO or a VP of marketing, there is still a need for a relationship. We can buy the cheapest car and still get from point A to point B. So why in the world would anybody buy a Tesla or anything else? Well, you do that because either you've built a relationship with the brand, or the brand has built a relationship with you,
right,
or you've built some kind of a direct relationship with somebody who works within that organization. So again, you took all of your knowledge of what you learned in school. You certainly, it sounds like, got your chance to kind of cut your teeth in sales and building those relationships and understanding the retail environment, or how does sales work, or how does perhaps a P&L work? How does, you know, how do you figure out what something costs, and then what can you sell it for? You end up in California. And as you said, you had your first son. How many kids do you guys have now?
We have 2 kids. A boy and a girl.
I was having a son.
That made you feel like I'm looking for something and I just couldn't find it out in the marketplace. So talk about that, because you really didn't have a background in that. And so was it just an opportunity for you that you felt like, I'm going to take everything I've learned along the way and I'm going to build something on my own? And how did you kind of get started, really?
So, you know, I think that things come out of a need, usually, unless you're sitting there writing a business plan. And, you know, when that need came up and it arose, I feel like, you know, parents or, you know, anyone for their kids, they figure it out. And so I could have just figured it out and said, you know, goodbye. You know, I made the popsicles and fruit bars for him and I feel better about it. But I did have a lot of first time mom friends at the moment because it was my first child. I was reading the labels of everything I was giving him, you know, really intently. And I saw that, you know, there was a void. I started to really look and kind of look within the natural markets, within conventional. And I saw that there was a void. I know, as well as, you know, my partner, who's my husband, I know what I'm capable of in regards to sales and relationships. I know that's my strength. And I think when you can use your strength and have kind of other people around you to fill those other voids, you can create something that's more than just a product. And my husband's background has always been in finance and everything that I'm not, kind of the yin to my yang. And so, you know, at the time, we just decided, you know, I wanted to do something. I wanted to do something on my own. I have a lot of passion for anything I get behind, whether it's my own or somebody else's. And so I thought, you know, if this is my own, I'm going to go full in and I'm going to kind of use my knowledge and my experience and my background and think of, you know, how this can be more than just a product. And like you said, how you can make that connection with consumer and connection with customers on a different level. And so I kind of pulled in this retro Palm Springs, California vibe, which really speaks to not only fashion and fun and aesthetics, which obviously is my background, but it speaks to simpler times. It speaks to everything that we were doing. It's throwing back to the basics, cleaning up ingredient labels, really making people feel a certain way. And I think that when you can create a great product and obviously have that emotional connector, you can do a lot. So we invested in a cold plate push cart. We branded this retro inspired modern pop, yesterday's classics, ingredients of today. And I stood every single weekend, Sean, out on the corner, you know, in my bright, colorful high heels with the red lipstick, the bright, you know, retro apron. And I had so much passion and so much intent on what I was doing that all of a sudden, you know, we had all of this media kind of coming towards us, consumers that were saying, oh my God, this reminds me of my childhood. I can give this to my kids. You know, he has a lot of allergies. This is great. And so, you know, from that point, doing this like a full summer every single weekend, I saw that, you know, there is runway for this product. We started to get inbounds from retailers and kind of, you know, took it from that point.
From there, you were able to build, again, an opportunity for people to at least know the brand or understand the brand a little bit better. And then it sounds like retailers started either reaching out to you or you started speaking more and more to retailers. So talk about that transition just a little bit. You have this brand, you've invested certainly some time and some effort into it. And then at that point, then you're trying to probably figure out, do I build it? Do I grow it? How big do I make it? How was that process for you? Talk to us a little bit about that.
I mean, I think it's really an evolution of the brand. So, I mean, starting from a cold plate push cart to having enough retailers, you know, to be able to take that step from hand making them out of a commercial kitchen, bringing it into, you know, a real manufacturer, finding out what the right manufacturer is. I mean, coming really from not having any knowledge in the CPG, you know, space and just getting really creative on the marketing front. So like you said, it's interesting because we started really from square one and it kind of evolved on its own. You know, as you get into it, you start to figure out, you know, where do I want to go? Do we want to grow it nationally immediately, or do you want to really go deep kind of within your home communities? We started out and we're still really, really kind of on the West Coast where we're, you know, best known, where we have the most followers. And so there's definitely strategy behind that where you go into places and then you learn, okay, well, I don't necessarily have to go into that big store quite yet. So we kind of learn along the way. And luckily, you know, as an emerging brand, as long as you do it thoughtfully, you can kind of backtrack and learn from testing and learning, right? I mean, that's really what you do.
Marketing obviously plays an important part in any of that growth. Mm-hmm. And so talk to us about that from the moment that you kind of had your first push cart out there and you're out there trying to let people know what it is kind of hand to hand. How has that evolved over the 7 years? What platforms do you feel like you've used effectively and what things do you feel like you've learned along the way from that perspective and standpoint?
Truthfully, all platforms on social media, I think, have different strengths, right? So For me, I've understood LinkedIn. I've been able to grow a network of more like B2B, right? So I felt like I was like the broker at first, right? So I figured out who is the buyer. I Googled the name. I figured it out on my own. Then I would go to LinkedIn. I figure out who the buyer is, and I have LinkedIn Premium. So that enabled me to get through to the buyers. It also let people within industry understand, oh my God, you know, who is this modern pop? Where are they coming from? So it let me get into the community very fast. Instagram, Twitter, I love Twitter. I love trying things. I think that every specific outlet has different strengths in today's day and age. I think you can do a tremendous amount of creative on your own without using an agency. And I think that raw, unfiltered kind of footage is so much more meaningful than what necessarily big agencies can do for you. We've worked with a couple different smaller agencies, and I've always said to them, it's got to look real. You know, it can't look too polished because people want to see real. They don't necessarily want to see these big commercials. Instagram is great, I think, for A&B testing, figuring out, you know, putting a little bit of money behind certain ads, seeing how it translates. If it translates well, you know, you get a lot of data and information there. And now, of course, like Instacart and all of these other online spaces that we're in because we're in retailers and understanding how to pay for ads and what makes sense. So I think if you can get creative and scrappy, which we have, you know, you learn a lot from doing a little.
You know, we talk to people of all shapes, sizes, companies of all shapes and sizes, and there's beauty in both. There's obviously, you know, if you're Intel and you've got, you know, these massive budgets, you can try lots of things and you can fail lots of times and still win. At the same time, it's really fun sometimes to talk to some scrappy companies, because sometimes it's through that scrappiness that you almost have to be careful not to fail. And so it requires you to just push, constantly learn, constantly evolve, constantly try to figure out how to get as close to a consumer as possible. And to your point, kind of how to feel as authentic as possible. As you've grown that over the 7 years, I'm sure you've learned a lot along the way. What's a lesson that you feel like you learned from a marketing perspective that speaks to that? Was there something that you tried that you thought, oh, this is definitely gonna work, and it didn't work for some reason? And what did you learn from that, if anything?
I mean, I think it's interesting, you know, through Instagram, how much kind of you can overlay, you know, different consumers, meaning like, you know, if we did giveaways potentially maybe earlier on with other like brands, people and consumers trust brands. So if we were to team up with like a bigger brand, which, you know, we're now doing, you all of a sudden get all of those eyeballs, obviously, on your brand, and it kind of translates over. In the past, we've always been very focused on growing our own brand, but I think that, you know, the consumer really translates one healthy brand to the next, and they see them kind of together and they'll try them. But I think, you know, doing more of those A&B testings and really pushing that through earlier on.
You talked about
kind of cross promotion, to your point, is a great way to be able to build sometimes brands on both sides. You know, it's the old school radio endorsement of, I know this guy. If this guy's talking about this brand, then this brand must be okay. You can do that brand to brand. We've done that a lot with a lot of the groups that we work with. And to your point, you're right. You know, you can package two things together and sometimes have a little more strength with that. Listen, we're talking to Julie Podolak, co-founder and chief marketing officer at The Modern Pop. Talk to me about who's kind of inspired you here along the way. Again, you've had to be small. You've had to be scrappy. You've had to figure out a lot of this, in essence, on your own. Mm-hmm. And that's hard as a co-founder. That's hard as somebody who's building something. Obviously, I'm sure you've leaned on your husband a lot as part of that. But who else have you leaned on that you feel like has helped push you or inspire you along the way?
I'll just tell you a quick little story. So very early on, I'd say like year number two, I'm a really big optimist too. Like, obviously it's not always perfect and bright and colorful and there's rainbows everywhere, which I make it appear. But early on, I wanted us to be in Starbucks. And I wanted us to be in Starbucks so badly because in my eyes, it doesn't make a lot of sense from a logistics standpoint. They don't have freezers. But I feel like if you can be a first mover into such a space that everybody knows and everybody goes, I'm a huge Starbucks fan myself. I thought if we could be the first, how amazing would that be? And everyone goes there with their kids and it would just be a great way to try to figure something out, right? So I remember just figuring out like who the executive team was, going after it on LinkedIn. I'm extremely persistent, but I'm also passionate. And I think that it shows through. I might be annoying to some people, but I think that unless you believe in it, you know, you're never going to get anywhere. And so I remember writing an email, and I tried to figure out, you know, Howard Schultz's email, and I wrote him an email. And I remember writing it to him and putting a picture at the bottom of my son and I and the Modern Pop brand. And I put my phone number at the end. And I said, you know, this is something that I'm so passionate about, and I really think it would be a great fit, and I'd love to have some time to connect with you. And I put my phone number in. And at the time, my son, you know, he still had like a pacifier, and this was very early on. And I threw him in the back of the car, and we were off to like go do something, go to the supermarket. And I had just gotten a car that actually talks to you and has surround sound. And all of a sudden, my entire car starts ringing, and I see like it's from Seattle. So I press, I didn't even really think about it because he was screaming in the background. And I press it, and he said, "Hey, Julie, it's Howard Schultz." And he called me, and I, first of all, like, I quickly took the binky and I threw it in my son's mouth. And he said, "Listen, I don't think it's a great fit right now for Starbucks, kind of our strategy where we are, but I want to let you know, keep doing what you're doing. Keep knocking on people's doors. You're going to get somewhere. I really appreciate the passion and persistence." And I just took that moment and it drove me. It really drove me. I mean, it was like a wake up call that, you know what, like, here I am, first time entrepreneur in the car with my screaming infant. But when you take the time to really believe in yourself, you're going to get response. And all I like is response, whether it's a yes or a no. I take the no as a maybe, and I circle back in a couple of years. I've always used that to kind of fuel me. That was more of a story, Sean, but
we've been doing this show for 5 seasons, and that's an amazing story. We've heard lots of great stories, lots of great people who talk about all the different things or things that have driven them. But think of just that, you know, again, if you're a marketer, you're listening to the show, you're either don't love where you're at, or you've been kicked in the ass by the pandemic, and you're not, you're just feeling down on yourself. Like, how are you going to make it through this year, or what's your next step? Does it mean that everybody who writes a letter to the head of Starbucks is going to get a return call? But at the same time, you're not going to get a call if you don't ask. You can guarantee that you will get a no if you never ask. But if you come from a place of passion, if you come from a place of honesty, if you come from a, I'm going to keep sending you an email until somebody at least responds back and says, please stop sending these emails, then you've done something. And that's all hopefully any of us are trying to do in this crazy world that is marketing. So I love that story. And I think hopefully as people are listening to this podcast, they take just that away, which is ask, right? Ask, what's the worst case scenario if you do?
And or if you don't. And I think too, Sean, like it's a lot of it is like the energy you put out, you know, like, I mean, I haven't always been like racing up the hill, but I tend to race and I get a lot back when I'm putting out vibration. So if I write, you know, if you write like 40 emails to people, you know, all of a sudden it's almost like a candy store. You know, you leave, you go out, do errands, and then I can't wait to check my email. Like, because I know you're putting seeds out, you know, you're seeding for growth. And if I don't do anything and I'm feeling like down in the dumps, all of a sudden the email goes quiet. Only what you put out is like you're setting yourself up for opportunity, whether or not it takes, right?
To your point, it's dropping those seeds. It's figuring out where your strengths are, understanding where your weaknesses are, navigating around that, believing in yourself is perhaps the most important part of any of this. Well, listen, Julie, we greatly appreciate you jumping on with us for a few minutes, talking to us a bit about Modern Pop. We were excited to have you in as a guest. We appreciate you making some time for us with your time now out on the East Coast. If you don't know Julie, do what I did. Follow her out there on LinkedIn. She puts some great content out there. Again, often very inspirational, no matter what size of the company it is that you work for, no matter what your position is in marketing. We love the brand. The look looks great. Did you come up with the logo yourself, or did you work with a group to come up with that? Because it is a pretty cool logo.
Yeah. So I feel like I'm kind of like the visionary. We have an incredible guy that's been with us since day one. And I won't even give out his name because I like, you know, keep him in a closet because he's like amazing. I'm like, you can't tell anybody. And he rocks it. I mean, anything that I kind of have a vision on, he sends me back like 2 pieces and he just nails it every time. So, you know, that's a mentor of mine too. So, I mean, you know, he really, when you work together, you become kind of you understand each other and we learn from each other, right? So
we've absolutely appreciate you making some time and being on this season of the CMO Suite.
Thank you, Sean.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. Podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You're a C-level manager. You shouldn't have to know the difference between behavioral or contextual targeting, but your agency should. Uconnex provides brands and biddable teams direct access to platforms like The Trade Desk, Google, Amazon, Facebook, OTT, and more. Their U.S.-based traders can train your in-house team or provide complete transparency with no minimums and CPM-based service pricing for true transparency. Something Mighty Hive, The Trade Desk, and Centro simply don't offer. Tired of being the smartest one in the room? Reach out to Uconnex today for a free demo. Uconnex, the world's leader in true, transparent, biddable media.
This episode of the CMO Suite is also brought to you by Winmo. Winmo is the most comprehensive and widely used advertising database, providing an unfair advantage to media and marketing professionals nationwide. CMO Suite listeners receive complimentary trials of Winmo just by visiting winmo.com/CMO Suite.